Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
This is Lori.
And this is Abby.
Welcome to episode 102 of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities.
Thank you for being with us. We're so excited for this next chapter, the next 100.
Oh, gosh.
We have a very special guest with us today. I know we say that a lot when we have guests. However, I think that this guest is a very special guest, and I believe that she comes from an arena or is going to talk on a topic that could be highly, highly beneficial to all parents and listeners out there. So we have Anna Pop from Pop Educational Services and Advocacy, who is an educational advocate. So thank you for being with us, Anna.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's very exciting.
We are excited to have you.
So do you mind just telling us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got into advocacy?
I would love to. I am the parent of children with disabilities. I was an educator. I've been in and out of education throughout my entire career. And I was also the director of a nonprofit where we did advocacy with government officials and community leaders. With community leaders. And I learned how to negotiate and worked for the, this was just a huge compilation of the three skills that I have created over my long-term career.
That's awesome.
And when my kids went to public school, I wasn't aware, even as an educator, that these laws covered my kids.
Right.
And so I just listened to what the school told me and hired more tutors because I didn't know that I had rights. And so when
you think the school, they're the professionals, they know, right?
Right, exactly. But and, you know, both my parents are educators, and they always taught me that you listen to the educator. They're the one who knows. But unfortunately, sometimes I think the administrators or the higher-ups who aren't touching the children every day don't always get it, and they have to take their budget and figure out how to divide the pie. And what I've learned is that the squeakier you are, the more of the pie you can get.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So, and I'm happy to say that I now have two daughters who teach. So we've now in
so
the
wonderful.
Fourth generation of teachers.
That's
in our
awesome.
Family. And who really understand the ins and outs of how to deal with children with diverse learning styles.
So as an advocate, what is your job? How would you define what you do?
So my job, I always say I'm like the Sherpa who leads the people through the process. Again, as I said, I didn't know anything when I was a parent. And if I can, I'm not an attorney, so I can't give you legal advice, but I'm trained in the laws, IDEA and Section 504 and ADA. I have higher level training in those laws so that I understand what and how they apply to the parents and the children in the schools, so that I can fill in the other half of the story and guide you through the process.
Hmm. That's awesome. So you can guide the parents, but also inform them of their rights and what these laws, you could probably put those laws in simpler terms for them and help them fully understand those laws and how it affects them and their student.
I kind of liken it to a surgeon and a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
The attorney is the surgeon who comes in and does the initial or does the actual procedure. And I'm the nurse. I'm sort of the caretaker and the person who explains things to the parents. And I'm
like
there
that.
Specifically for their child and to work on their unique individual educational needs, and for that parent to learn how they should. The ideal is that someday that parent would be able to not need me,
right,
and to manage it on their own.
Right. So I like that analogy.
We talked a little bit about IDEA, which is the federal laws that govern special education, and then 504, which is under ADA, right?
No, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act was the first law that governed, that protected people with disabilities.
Okay.
And so it is a non-discrimination law. IDEA was funded. It has money behind it for the federal government to pay the states to serve these children. But you are covered by Section 504 from birth to death.
Mm-hmm. Where IDEA is just...
An IDEA is just 3 years old till your 22nd year, which is till your 22nd birthday, basically.
Okay. And so that is the biggest difference between those.
Well, and then there's the disabilities that... There are 13 specific disabilities under IDEA that they cover but for Section 504, it's any disability that renders you unable to perform at the level of your peers.
It has to impact a major life function.
That was what I was trying to think of.
Have a significant
impact on a major life function. Exactly.
So, but real quickly, sorry if this is going off on a tangent, I just want to make sure, because we do get a lot of parents that call us with a lot of questions, and we are happy to guide them and answer their questions. You know, we both worked previously in public schools before, in special education, before coming to the private sector. But before we get more into advocacy, is this something schools provide? Or is it a private service?
This is a private service that parents can tap so that they have someone who's watching out for their rights.
Okay. Good
versus
to know.
Versus who the school is watching out for, you know, the budget line and things like that.
The school district.
Right,
yeah. So it's something the parents have to reach out and find on their own.
They have to reach out and find on their own. And there are different types of advocates. Because advocacy is not, we're not licensed. And when I just started to practice, I decided that I had to go for special training and to learn the laws so that I understood it and I could guide the parents and be able to use them as pressure points to the district when I go to an ARD or a 504 meeting. But there are other advocates who have not had that training and who are, you know, have relied on their experience. Mm-hmm. Both are good. It's just a matter of who you want to use. I want to walk away with compromises so that we can all live with it. Your child in that school district is a marriage to some extent, and you have to make compromises here and there. And True. We try to get what's super important, the most important for your child. And there are some advocates who prefer to, you know, who want to litigate. So you just have to be mindful.
Okay. So can you give us some examples of the types of things that you hear, some of the most common concerns parents come to you with under special education and then under 504?
Okay. So the common things under, as I said, everybody's covered under 504. And 504 affords you accommodations, which means while... They have to equal the playing field while your student is learning the skills. If you have it, and I guess where I want to start actually to say is to make the point that special education is not a place. It's a continuum of services that the school district has to offer to be able to educate your child. And we're always looking to bridge the gap between where the child is now and where they should be with regard to grade level.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
I like that.
That's a good point, yes.
We want them, you know, some children have more capability than other children, but we're always striving for grade level, and we're always looking for the least dangerous assumption, which is that the child can do it if you allow them and you repeat. And some kids need a lot of repetition, and some kids kids don't, and they just learn differently.
Right.
So just because your child is in a classroom, a general education classroom, and doing well, doesn't mean they don't have a disability that they could benefit from specially designed instruction. And again, it's not individualized. It doesn't mean that it's going to be one-on-one instruction. It means that it's going to be instruction that other children aren't getting as a regular part, as part of the regular curriculum. So that's the first thing that I think parents are afraid to sometimes ask for, that evaluation, because they don't want their child put in a room.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's just not what special education is meant to be.
Right.
So
it's evolved tremendously, I would say, from even when I was in school. You know, I think, sidebar, that, you know, everyone kind of thought of special education as children that had physical disabilities,
severe
disabilities. You know, they were all self-contained in one classroom primarily throughout the day. And so you didn't think that special education involved students that were dispersed throughout your regular classes. We didn't even know if any students were getting accommodations or special pull-out services. Right. So I think it has evolved tremendously.
I agree.
But like you said, it is a continuum of services, and hopefully it is somewhat individualized, as it should be, to your child's needs, where some students with learning disabilities or other disabilities might be okay in the regular education classroom with accommodations and maybe a less rigorous grading style based on their individual goals, right? Whereas, you know, some students only need Section 504 accommodations, and they don't need any changes to the curriculum, the instruction, the grading, whatnot.
But one of the things that I've tried to express upon a lot of school districts is that a accommodation is not there to teach the child. The accommodation is there as a scaffolding while the child learns the skill. So if they tell you that your child has spell check because he has trouble spelling, great, and that helps him get that paper done maybe for the next one, and spelling may or may not count.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't teach that child the fundamental skills that they're missing regarding
spelling. That's a good point.
Yeah, spelling. That is
a good point.
True.
So circling back to some of the biggest concerns that you get from parents in each of those arenas.
So there are a couple of major concerns. One is that if you're a high-functioning child and you walk into a gen ed classroom, the teacher assumes that you can function like all the other kids, and not that you might have a reading, you might be behind in reading, or you might be behind in math, or you have a functional skill deficit like speech, because it's not just about academics. The idea of IDEA is to prepare a student for whatever's post-secondary. So whether that's work or education or whatever, they have to have those functional skills as well. It's that the teacher treats the child like a typical student and assumes that child's lazy because they can't get their homework in on time or get the piece of paper, write down their assignments. And we have to be creative. That's one of the things that I do as an advocate, is to be creative on, well, what kind of accommodations is this child going to need while we're teaching him those executive function skills?
Mm-hmm.
So I think with a lot of kids, it's about executive function. It's about social situations. Mm-hmm. The primary disabilities I think I hear from are those children who have a specific learning disability, which is not solely dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and kids with executive function issues, which could be ADHD,
mm-hmm.
and children with autism.
Mm.
And the higher functioning the child is with autism, the more likely they're going to be misunderstood by the teacher. And that's, you know, by the general education teacher who doesn't have necessarily the training in how to vary the style. Or, you know, in to support the teacher, they may or may not have the time
or the training, or
the knowledge. So it's not that they don't want to.
Right. So then it sounds like one huge concern you're hearing is that they're worried, parents are worried, or they have evidence that the teacher is holding their student to high expectations and expecting them to function just like their grade level peers in that classroom. And if they can't do it, then instead of it being maybe a learning difficulty or a learning challenge, it's more they must be lazy.
An effort.
Or not putting in the effort, or they don't
or
care.
Or defiant.
Oppositional. Yeah. Right.
And that's for a lot of kids. When you're over, for a lot of adults too, when we're overwhelmed, we shut down. And that's what these kids are doing. And the teachers are, and school administrators, it's not just the teachers, are misinterpreting the signs that they're seeing for these children. A lot of the disabilities have comorbidities. So, you know, if your student has dyslexia or dysgraphia, they might also have ADHD and the other, you know, so they're just struggling and they're in this sea trying to tread water and they just need somebody to help them.
Throw them a rope.
Yeah.
Do you sometimes find that you have to help the parents understand or get a realistic view of what the school is capable of? Do you have a lot of parents that have unrealistic expectations?
Well, I think that's the reason that I made the point that individualized instruction does not mean one-on-one instruction or right. My kid needs a para, because there are limitations that the districts have, but they are obligated to, and we're talking mostly about IDEA right now, and I think maybe we have to go back and make the differentiation between 504 and IDEA, but the school districts have to meet the child where they are, and sometimes, but not all the time, that means that maybe something additional has to be added for that student. Maybe the resource room isn't right for that student, or maybe or another level of learning isn't right for that student, and the gen ed class, and they have to kind of meet them somewhere else, and that's what we're supposed to be creatively figuring out for that child.
Right.
Rather than, we have 45 minutes to do this ARD meeting, because that's the teacher's planning period, and I'm telling you what we're going to do, and you're going to sign it, and you're going to walk out. I want to teach the parent, but yes, they have to understand there are some limitations.
Right.
But do you have schools that will just say, we don't have that, we can't do that here? Like, we don't do resource room, or we don't have...
Well,
XYZ. Inclusion.
Yeah, whatever.
Right. Co-teaching.
Co-teaching. So schools are hesitant to say that, because that puts them in a... interesting situation because it's their legal obligation to provide it and to figure out a way to do so. So they're never, I find, going to come out and really tell you that they don't have that. They'll say, this is typically what we do. And my answer is always, special education is not about typical.
Right.
So,
and we're meeting together as a committee. You mentioned
in a collaborative
ARD
way.
Meeting, which... Listeners, in Texas, we call our IEP team meetings ARD Committee, which ARD, Admission Review Dismissal Committee, but it's essentially an IEP team meeting.
And collaboratively.
Collaborating on developing an individualized education program for your student, but what I found a lot of times in my experience in public education is... that it's not necessarily going to be, they're not there to ensure your child is making straight A's.
Correct.
They're there to ensure your child is making what's called adequate yearly progress.
Well,
right.
So it used to be that it was de minimis. The Supreme Court had at one point said that as long as your child was making some progress.
Oh, really?
In 2017, the Andrew F. case made it that it had to be ambitious progress based on the child's circumstances.
Mm, okay.
Which, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really tell you exactly what that means. But again, they are not. It's not about your child being successful. It's about your child making progress, and progress is what makes your child successful over the long haul, and it depends on their capabilities and the situation they're in.
So then back to Section 504, which we have talked at nauseam about the differences and how Section 504 is really to level the playing field for accommodations. Can we talk a little bit about the same issue that we sometimes come across there, where parents feel like my child has the potential to be a straight A student, but because of their ADHD, they're only making B's? That's not the point of an accommodation, is to give them that boost,
leg up,
right, to get an extra, to get that A, right? It's not, that's not the point.
It's to hold them up, support them while they learn the skill that they're not on grade level at. And that can be, it can be a social skill as well as it can just be, you know, reading level.
Mm-hmm.
Accommodations sometimes mask disabilities. And so you have to be very careful about allowing the school to over-accommodate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that they really understand where your child is. And that's, you know, again, they're if your child's not making progress, that puts them in a gray area, and they don't want to see that. So they're going to tap dance and tell you, you know, how beautifully the child is doing. And my recommendation before everything was on Google, whatever, was to get a big box from Target and start throwing your kids' work samples in, so that when you go to that meeting, you know that you can show them, well, but this is how he's writing. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me he's at grade level, and I'm showing you that he can't capitalize or punctuate or even maybe get the word on the line.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
And it hasn't looked any different from September to now or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, right. Or 2 years ago, it still looks the same. And, you know, we do understand right now that our school districts are strapped, and they're not only strapped for money, they're strapped for people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my heart, I understand that. And I support the teachers, but I also want to make sure my client's child is getting some of the pie they need.
When you go to these meetings, do you feel like the school is responsive to what you have to suggest?
Yeah, for the most part, because I try to be collaborative. I'm not there to say, you know, I don't want to tell anybody that they don't know what they're doing, or they're like, I want to make sure that we're working together, but I have an expertise that typical parents don't have, and a point of view that typical parents don't have. And so I'm their objective voice. And I've even gone to ARD meetings with special ed attorneys, because when they're sitting there, you're emotional. This is your child.
Absolutely.
I really do feel like
and
we need you.
At
every parent needs an Anna, right?
Yes.
So many parents go to these meetings and they don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. They sign on something and they leave and they really aren't sure what just happened.
Right.
And it's to no fault if this is just the process. And when you're doing 100 of these meetings a year or more, it could become sort of routine to you as the staff member.
Right.
It's not to the parent. So.
Or like you said, they're trying to squeeze it into a 45-minute period the teacher, Gen Ed teacher has their planning period.
Right.
When in fact it may need to be an hour and a half.
Right.
So, I mean, I think individualized should continue to be the key word to focus on, you know.
But unique educational needs.
And
I think those are the three key words.
Unique educational needs. I like that. And, you know, special education, you know, the way its terminology and the way it's defined, or part of its definition, is that it's specially designed instruction and curriculum. So there are a lot of students out there that need specially designed instruction for them to master a skill or make progress on a skill. But on the other side of the coin, most schools are not going to say that's going to be provided one-on-one, or you're going to have an aide sitting next to you in class because you need to work on your handwriting, but you also struggle with paying attention and staying focused and engaged.
So that's what we try, you know, I try to do is I want to walk out with the school, you know, not being a little bit happy, and maybe, and I don't want to say the parent not being a little bit happy, but because we want it, we have to work within the framework.
Everyone has to give.
Everybody has to give a little, and it's important that actually the parents really understand. And I think the most important takeaway is that the parents understand truly what their rights are, and their rights are different under 504 than their rights are under IDEA, and what they can do, the first steps they can take to support their kids. Because we have found, or in my experience, when a parent says, you know, my kid is really struggling, and they say, well, we're giving him, you know, intervention, that doesn't preclude the parent from being allowed to ask for a special education evaluation, which is different than a 504 evaluation. Mm-hmm. A 504 evaluation is not formal. Yeah. It's people who know the child sitting around a table deciding what they need educationally. It's anecdotal. Mm-hmm. Where a special education evaluation is a full individual evaluation. It's objective, it's anecdotal, it's the perspective of the parent, it's the perspective of the teacher, it's the perspective of the student. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like I go back to the doctor visit, right? You present at the ER and you tell them that your left arm hurts and you're short of breath, and that are typically symptoms of a heart attack, but they tell you your left toe is broken. Then you have to...
Right.
Rethink that.
So, in talking about that evaluation, you know, I think it is important for parents to understand that, for the most part, I think schools do a pretty good job of doing a thorough evaluation. And it does include, you know, lots of different forms of data, some informal, some formal. But what about those parents who go to that meeting and, one, don't fully understand the evaluation, and two, they're not so sure if they agree with the findings in that evaluation?
So that's a whole topic, procedural safeguards. No, but I'm happy to address that. One of procedural safeguards, and I can only speak to Texas because that's where my experience are, you would walk into the meeting, they would hand you a book of your procedural safeguards, which is your recourse as the parent if you don't agree with what the school district has done. Mm-hmm. And so they hand you this book and they ask you to sign, but they don't tell you anything. And I have to tell you, I've tried to read it multiple times and it's boring.
Yes.
And if you have three kids pulling at you and you work and you have to, who has time to sit down and read that?
It's got a lot of legalese and jargon.
And that's the other thing about IEP meetings and 504 meetings in general, is that these are legal documents and nobody at that table is an attorney.
Right.
So everybody has their perspective, what they've been trained of what the responsibilities and rights are, and their interpretation.
So have you ever been in the middle of an IEP team meeting and you have to ask for a little break or whisper to the parent, you know, kind of back to say, hey, you can ask questions or you don't have to agree to this or...
So I always tell parents before we walk into a meeting, I bring Post-it notes with me. When they were online, during COVID, we were texting. Mm-hmm. Yes. But I bring Post-it notes with me and I always say, you're allowed a break. You are a member of the IEP committee, an equal member. And I used to be the director of a nonprofit, and I know a lot about governance. And before we had a board meeting, we got all the information together and we handed out a packet to all of the members of the board so that they could read it and be prepared for that meeting. And that's what you as a parent deserve. And you simply have to write an email to whoever the coordinator is and ask that you receive that packet and give yourself enough time to be able to look through it, maybe a weekend even, mm-hmm. of the draft IEP, all the data that they're using to determine those goals or the present levels of academic and functional mm-hmm. performance. And, you know, sit down and read through it and make yourself a list of the questions that you have or the inconsistencies that you see in it.
Mm-hmm.
So my process when I'm looking at a case is I start by reading the evaluation, and I usually start by reading an outside evaluation if they have one. Because
mm-hmm.
then I'm really going to know what the child needs. And then the next step is I read the school's evaluation. And I am looking for those inconsistencies or things they might have missed, just because it's a function of their, you know, their budget or time and effort.
Mm-hmm.
And then I make a list of what I see as the student's weaknesses, and I'm ready to, I'm walking in there with that list, knowing that this is what we're going to ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And these are how we're going to write our goals.
Right. Like, how are you going to address these needs?
How are you going to address these needs?
That's awesome.
And so takes a lot of time.
Sure.
So again, it goes back to the 45 minutes. But please, as a parent, understand that, and it can be very daunting. There are like 10 people in there who
yes.
are all for the district,
mm-hmm.
and you're an individual, and maybe you have your spouse with you.
It's intimidating,
but you're an equal part of that. And I tell my clients, they can write me notes on the Post-its. We take the Post-its with us when we leave. They can pinch me if they want a break, and they can ask for a break if they have to think about things or use the restroom. A lot of the software packages that the school districts use want you to sign while you're sitting there. Take it home. You have 5 days. Think about it.
Yeah.
Read it, a hard copy, or it doesn't have to be a hard copy. I'm old.
Mm-hmm.
But read the document in full to make sure that everything you requested is in there, and make sure that everything you requested, if they've said no, is documented appropriately in the deliberations and in the prior written notice.
It's a lot.
That's good advice. You know, I can't tell you how many parents we get that call us or that schedule an evaluation with us, and they'll say, my student gets Section 504 services and has an IEP.
Well, Section 504 is the umbrella.
Yeah, but they're just confused.
Right,
they don't understand.
They are confused, and the school hasn't made sure to fully
right.
inform them. Or they also a lot of times say, my student, you know, my child has an IEP and receives special education services. And if we say, you know, under which disability category, they're like, I'm not sure. Or a learning disability. And
right.
they don't know
in
exactly
what?
In which area or what it is.
Yeah, it is incredibly frustrating.
Uh-huh.
You know, we talked about how I truly believe everybody needs one of you to go with them to every ARD meeting, but not every parent can afford the extra
right.
services.
True.
So what do you recommend for parents who can't afford their own advocate?
Private advocate.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's a lot of educational organizations out there who teach kind of the skills that parents need. I made a list for Texas again.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
And so I, you know, one of the resources that's out there is through the Texas Education Agency, or TEA, and it's called SpedTex.
Oh.
And it's free, and I call them and ask them questions sometimes. So you
awesome.
Can just call and ask questions. They'll do some of the research. They'll get back to you.
Really?
Yes.
SpedTex.
We'll put it in the show
okay.
notes.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. There, and then if you think you might have a legal issue, or you can reach out to Disability Rights of Texas.
Okay.
And Disability Rights doesn't take every case, but you get on their website and you fill out the form, and typically someone will call you back and
good
kind of guide
yeah.
you.
That's
then
awesome.
There's another parent resource called Resource Network Partners. Or no, it's I wrote it backwards. Partners Resource Network.
I've heard of
Partners
that.
Resource.
Right.
Yeah, I
and that's the nonprofit
too.
That's federally funded that
wow.
offers you advice as well. Not
wow.
They don't go to ARD. None of these go to ARD meetings with you, but if you can learn the fundamentals of how to prepare yourself and what are your like 10 rights.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are more, but you know, really what your rights are then, and understand them. Then there's the ARC organization, which is a national organization, ARC. Mm-hmm. And they have different chapters around Texas. And some of those chapters deal with, one is a legislative, deal solely with the legislative. There are other chapters that offer more services. And then also you always can go to the Council of Parents, Attorneys, and Advocates, which is a national organization, and to for resources to rights law, WRIGHTS law.
Their website.
Their website.
A plethora of information.
Rights law. So if people are interested in reaching you and have questions for you specifically, what's the best way for them to find you?
Is my website, which is popeducationservices.org, popeducation.com, I think is what it is. I should have maybe memorized that better.
We'll put it in the show notes. And pop is P-O-P-P.
Right, exactly.
Oh my gosh, that's so wonderful. I'm so glad to know there's so many resources out there for parents.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And then every specific disability has their own
organizations
instead of resources.
That's true.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Good point.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you
I
so
appreciate
much
you
for
being here.
Me.
This is we could talk all day because I
really
do have 100 more questions. So we may be having a second round.
Yes, we later might on. Need to. Thank you so much.
We'll include all of Anna's information in our show notes. If you guys have any questions for us or have any suggestions for future episodes, you can always email us at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com.
You can always visit our podcast website at www.ltldpodcast.com. There you can see every episode that's been released either in chronological order, or you can choose by categories and click on the category you're most interested in and listen to all the episodes that fall in that category.
Thanks so much, Anna. Thanks for everybody for being here and listening. Have a great day.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.